Hello, Lifebook members from around the world, and thank you for tuning in to the Lifebook Member Podcast for November Quality of Life Month. Loving diving deep into quality of life, one of my favorite categories. And I'm so excited for today's guest for today's show. He is a Lifebook veteran. He's a fan favorite, a show favorite. He's been on so many times, but it's been a while. Belief expert Lyon Goodman is on the line. What's up, Lyon?
Great to be back, Jordan. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, I want to call you a limiting belief expert, but that almost paints you in a negative light. I guess you're a limiting belief clearing expert, right? To be specific.
Yes, that's much better. Or just don't call me a limited belief expert. That
right.
Could confuse people.
Because that means that you're just really good at limiting people. No, that's
maybe I should
not,
call myself an unlimiting belief expert. That would be good, too.
Exactly. ClearYourBeliefs.com. Is that still where people can find you, Lyon?
Yes. Yes. Good place to start.
Everyone needs to check out Lyon's work. If you haven't dived back into the libraries and check out the belief clearings that we did throughout 2019, he's just a really great staple in the show. And it's great to be back on the line with him for Quality of Life Month specifically, because I was really having some major revelations, Lyon, about how beliefs play into our quality of life. Why don't we just start there? And let me ask you that question. How would you specifically say that beliefs shape our quality of life overall?
I think beliefs are the main shaper of quality of life, because you can imagine two people in identical circumstances, whether it's being in poverty in Africa or being a wealthy businessman in America, how they look at themselves and how they look at their environment. They could be equally happy or they could be completely unequal in terms of how they perceive their quality of life. A successful businessman who wants to be much more successful, he's a millionaire, but he wants to be a 10 millionaire or a 100 millionaire, is going to be miserable. And a poor person in Africa who's living in poverty can be happy because they have a healthy family.
Right.
So it really is what we call mindset, perspective, and that is what determines our quality of life much more than anything in the external world.
Yeah, I mean, I like that you say that right off the bat, that it's the main contributor, because you could certainly argue that. Like you said, you can find so many people in so many different states having such different experiences under the same circumstances. So that really would point to beliefs shaping it. But I think relativism is also a big one. Like you mentioned, health. Health and quality of life is huge. And there's that funny, I forget the stand-up comedian who talks about it, but he talks about how great you feel after you're done being sick from the flu.
Yeah.
How you're so miserable when you're laid up. And then when you're finally up, it's like everything's just a little bit brighter. Like the sun is shining a little bit more. The birds are tweeting a little bit more beautifully. And he does a whole joke on it. But there's really truth to that, which is if you experience negativity, it can sometimes, in many people, trigger gratitude, I would say.
Well, that is true. Unfortunately, the way our brain works, that hit of dopamine, the positive quality neurotransmitter, fades pretty quickly.
Right.
So you can be very grateful for life and everything that's happening. And then the next day, you're sort of back to the norm.
That's so true.
So it's mostly our norm mindset that determines our quality of life rather than the small ups and downs.
That's true. And I think that's something that you can work at. That's what Dr. Joel Wade kind of asserts. And I feel like it doesn't get enough play, enough credibility, enough talk in our modern, you know, lexicon, our modern zeitgeist, this idea that you can shape your normal mood through real, tangible improvements to your quality of life, cultivating relationships, right? Improving your own health, things like that. That's what I feel leads to a true quality of life that's very hard to argue against. You know what I mean?
Yes, I agree completely. And I see it in two ways. One is that's the outside-in approach. I'm going to reach out and be with my friends more, or I'm going to commit to a relationship and get married and have children. Mm. These are things that do provide real happiness in life. However, there's also the inside-out approach, which is what beliefs did you form about yourself, or about other people, or about the world when you were a kid that are still haunting you, that are still coming back. There are still big, thick filters in front of your eyes, like a cataract that you perceive the world through. So if you have negative bias inside your own view of yourself, then it's going to be hard to be happy, even if you have a lot of great relationships.
100%. And, you know, we've talked, as we did our explorations last year, we spoke about how, you know, when you're a young child, a lot of these beliefs are implanted. And for instance, if you have this idea that you're never going to be secure or happy until you have X amount of money in the bank, that's actually a real trap, because you're kind of insuring unhappiness until that point. And then you're not even insuring happiness once you reach that point. Oftentimes people go, I don't feel the security that I thought I would. Does that make sense?
Yeah, this is part of our materialistic culture, in which we're convinced that objects make us happy.
Right.
And it's unfortunate, because objects don't make us happy. I mean, you get a thrill with a new car, you know, until you get the first scratch in it, and then it's just a car.
Right.
You know? You know, you get a thrill out of a date until the, you know, you've been with a person for 6 months and the thrill wears off, and now that you're in relationship with a person, you have to gain some relational skills, you know.
Right.
So the outside-in approach is important, but the inside-out approach is equally important. I think both have to happen. And in some cases, you have to clear the beliefs first in order to even open up the possibility of the new relationship or the new job or better relationship with the people that you're in. So it's really a two-way highway.
Yeah, absolutely. We use money as an example, but isn't it just kind of the, I don't know exactly how to phrase it, it's I'll be happy when. I'll be happy when. And this again points back to how anyone can be happy or miserable in a situation, because that I'll be happy when actually can flip-flop. So a lot of people's I'll be happy when I'm rich, I'll be happy when I'm married, I'll be happy when I'm finally divorced, I'll be happy when I have kids, I'll be never happy because I have kids and I'm trapped in the...
Right.
There are literal polar opposite thoughts in people's minds that can make them equally ecstatic or completely miserable.
That's right. Research has been done where they interviewed lots of people at lots of different economic levels and said, how much money would make you have a happier life? And consistently, from the poorest of the poor to the richest of the rich, everybody said about double what they currently had.
Wow.
So it doesn't, you know, it's not, it's just a scale issue. You know, it's like the more money you have, the more money you think you need in order to be happy.
It's so true.
It's quite funny. Yeah.
Yeah. And like you said, I think it's a bit of a shame, because there is something to be said for, you know, material possessions and working on projects that create value and amassing wealth. These are all good things. But to say that it lands in the same happy, the same quote happy field as the things we discussed, you know, like cultivating relationships, contributing to your community. These are things that give you real, it almost needs its own word, you know, like it's a lasting satisfaction, a true meaningfulness, a meaningful version of happiness.
That's right. That's the long lasting version, because objects are just objects. Things are just things. People are who make us happy, you know, and good relationships, children, raising your family, making enough money to keep your family, you know, in a good place, health, activities, experiences. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that really count. And research, again, throughout the world has been done that shows that those are the things that create real happiness. It's not how many things you have on your desk or in your garage.
So in the quality of life category, we examine how we spend our days. And I think that focusing on all of the wonderful things you just mentioned is almost a surefire way to ensure a relatively high constant quality of life. I think where we get it wrong, I think a lot of it actually stems from technology and social media. I think that we fool ourselves into thinking that we're connecting, as you described, when we hop on Facebook. And I don't think we're getting the correct connection. Can you talk about the role of social media in all of this?
Sure. There's a movie out called The Social Dilemma, I think
right.
the name is, which shows that the social media companies have figured out how to press the dopamine button in our brains. And so when someone likes you on Facebook, you get a little shot of dopamine, which is the happy chemical in your brain. And you go, ooh, somebody likes me. Now, you add those up and you get hundreds of those little dopamine button pushes a day, and you've wasted your entire day by looking at a screen and right. hoping to get more people to like you. So it is a fake. They've used neurophysiology to fake us into staying on their platforms. And it's really unfortunate because staring at a screen does not ultimately create happiness. It might give you pleasure, but you can also put an electrode in a rat's brain and into the pleasure center, and it'll press the lever to get those little shots of dopamine until they die. They'll just continue to press the lever
exactly.
and forget to eat, which is what addiction is, right? So we are truly addicted to the dopamine rushes we get, whether it's the games we play on our computer or our phone, or the likes that we get on Facebook, or the how many views we get on YouTube. This is a dopamine economy, and it's not true happiness.
Wow, that's a really good way to put it. When you take a look at people's quality of life on average, you know, maybe the people you work with, or you teach people who work with, you know, others' beliefs. So do you feel that social media, too much screen time in general, is a kind of, I mean, that's at the top of my list for negative contributors to one's quality of life right there, right up with poor diet and poor interpersonal skills. I mean, screen addiction is a real thing.
Yeah, and it has to be looked at as an addiction, and it has to be treated as an addiction. One of my friends recommends taking a day off, a 24-hour period where there's no screen time, just so you can remember that there's a world outside.
Totally.
You know, take a walk. Let's go look at the birds and the trees, and remember that there's a three-dimensional world. It's not all two-dimensional in your face. And I worry about the generation that's growing up now staring at their screens all the time. Like, they're talking to each other through their screens instead of face-to-face. And here we have COVID, and the COVID crisis is actually reinforcing the fact that we can connect through screens,
yes.
which is, you know, thank goodness we have them, because we at least can connect that way. Mm-hmm. But once we're back into human contact, I hope that we realize that that's a lot better. It's
right.
a lot more meaningful. It's a lot more real than looking at somebody through a Zoom link.
We really do have to understand that, because there's something missing from the virtual interaction. And it relates directly to quality of life, because, again, I feel that this type of impersonal connection is adding up to a very poor quality of life. When people interact on the internet, there's something about it that's just so much more nasty than interpersonal interactions. And what worries me, Lion, is that literally people are lowering the standard, the value that they place on their relationships. What I mean is, when you see someone posting something that you don't like, you end up unfriending them. You end up cutting them out of your life. Whereas I don't think that would have ever happened in just a live setting. Like, I don't know if it's oversharing combined with the way the platform works, but I see it time and time again, people literally ending relationships, sometimes family relationships, over things like political beliefs, things going on in the health world that divide people, any topic that can divide people in the room. I worry that we're not valuing our relationships more than some stance we take on some hot button topic argument. You know what I mean?
I do. We have been trained toward polarization by companies like Facebook that emphasize outrage, because it creates more sticky eyeballs. Mm-hmm. They're selling eyeballs to their advertisers, right?
Right?
So if you can keep the person's eyes on your platform, you have more to sell to your advertisers. So it's a business deal, right? And so what they've done is they've figured out, well, what keeps people active on our site? What keeps them from clicking away? Well, it's outrage. It's polarization. It's you know, people yelling and screaming at each other. So this is inculcating our entire culture. And so our politics are completely polarized.
Mm-hmm.
There's the left and the right, and hardly anybody in the middle anymore. It does exactly what you said to families. It splits people apart. And when we're in a three-dimensional world, when we're actually present with another human being,
right.
This has also been proven over many years. You realize that they're human, you're human, you both
yes.
have faults, you both have, you know, strange habits and quirks, and weird hairs coming out of weird places. And you go, okay, well, we're human.
So true.
And so we're going to make adjustments for each other. But with the distance of social media, now I don't have your humanness in front of me. I only have an opinion. I only have words in front of me. And of course, I can't hear your voice tone.
Yes.
Maybe I can on Zoom. I can't smell you. All of the things that our brains were designed for, being able to look at people's facial features up close, see whether they're, you know, see
yes, micro expressions, all of that. Yeah.
Yeah. All of that's been taken away from us. And so, yeah, it's hard to feel human and feel a human to human connection. But through all that,
I have a hard time getting through Quality of Life Month with, and this isn't something I like to do on the Lifebook podcast. This isn't something we do at Lifebook, which is recommend specific strategies to everybody. One thing we've learned at Lifebook is that there is no one right answer, right? Everybody's answer is different. But man, I'm taking a look at Quality of Life. I'm doing interviews with you. I'm doing interviews with Dr. Sanjeev Chopra. I'm doing interviews with Dr. Joel Wade. I just got to say it. I think limiting, if not cutting out your social media, is a huge move for a lot of people's quality of life. I would say almost everybody. Again, it's like, I don't know if I've ever made a blanket sweeping statement like that, but it's just coming out there. Like doctors all agree that sugar is bad for you. It doesn't matter if you're a paleo guy or a vegan guy. I'm starting to feel the same way about social media, or at the very least, too much social media, which I think is a small amount personally.
I think a good exercise for everyone listening is to start documenting how much time you spend in front of screens.
That's a good idea.
Computers, phones, TVs. And again, isolated with COVID, of course, our use is going to go up. As soon as we can start getting back together, we've got to cut it back. It's really good to do a time audit of yourself and start really recognizing what you're getting during that time. Like, you know, when I watch a movie on TV, I'm getting entertainment time. My brain gets to shut off and I get to look into somebody else's life or some other place that I've never had contact with. That's a little bit educational. If I'm watching a program that's educational, then I'm getting some value.
It's not all created equally. That's true.
Right. If I'm watching nonsense, then I'm getting programmed with nonsense. So it's just so important for people to recognize what's happening.
I think that the time audit can only help with clarity. And then I think that second part is really great, Lyon, which is something that we always recommend. This is something my dad brings up all the time, which is use your time consciously. The bottom of the barrel is endlessly scrolling through the feed, right? That means that you have no direction and you're being fed from the algorithm. Whereas you can hop on YouTube and your YouTube feed kind of feeds back what you feed it. I watched a great documentary on Saladin versus Richard the Lionheart, the Third Crusades. My God. And you can see your YouTube feed start to change and populate with more educational stuff. So you're right. Not all screen time is created equally, and auditing it and really kind of scrutinizing it is always a good idea, I would say.
Yeah, I think we have a business idea here that one of your listeners should start up, which is a app that audits all of your screen time and puts it into categories and then feeds it back to you and says, you might want to cut back on this because you're becoming an idiot.
Totally. Yeah. Or how about this? No, that's so true. The kind of idiot box dumbing down effect. I get that from too many video games. I'll literally feel my brain wasting away. But then also, I'll tell you a big one, Lyon, is kind of the dark stuff and like gore and like zombies eating flesh and all that stuff. If you put too much stuff of that in your head, it can really mess with your quality of life. It can mess with your sleep. That's very true too. Kind of rating it on like maybe you're doing a little too much violent or scary stuff. I like that idea, man.
Yeah, I'm amazed when I look for a TV program to watch. I look at movies primarily, and there are so many slasher movies and zombie movies and murder movies. And it's like, oh my God, what are we feeding our children? You know, it's known that the amount of violence on TV is much more than the violence in the world.
Right.
And there's more cops on TV than there are cops in the world.
Right.
And there's more criminals on TV than there are criminals in the world. And so as we're watching TV, we're thinking, oh my God, that's what the world looks like.
Right.
And so we get this warped view of the world by watching things that are meant to grab our attention and push our hormones around and and drive our neurotransmitters. So we really are in a strange ecology of attention and of viewing the world, different ways of viewing the world.
And I love what you said earlier about the economy of dopamine. That's exactly what's going on. So listen, those are some very, you know, mind expanding concepts we just explored. And if I can just kind of bring it back around, I think that is the takeaway when it comes to improving your quality of life, is that you're being presented a lot of things by people who are telling you these things will make you happy. But if you really listen to the experts, again, the people on this program, just any of the, you know, greatest thinkers of our time, they all point to the same things, that eudaimonia from the ancient Greek philosophers, right? Cultivating a life you can be proud of by focusing on the things we mentioned, you know, relationships, health, success, but success is a tricky one. I like what Joel Wade says is working on projects that contribute to the world, projects that push your skill sets, and projects that you can be proud of. Success, though, is a weird one because I almost feel like that word is one of those words that gets implanted when you're young, like those limiting beliefs that we discussed earlier. What do you think about success and quality of life, Lion?
Success is one of the things that makes us feel good about ourselves, right? So it builds self-esteem. However, the way it's put in our culture, in our economy, I'm talking about the West. I know you have people all over the world listening to this. But in the Western culture, especially in America, success is associated with a lot of money and a lot of things. But that's what we define as success. However, in other cultures, success is defined by having a lot of friends and having a healthy family and learning and growing and having community, right? That's what success is. So you have to look at your own definition of success. What do you believe about success? And write it down and then ask yourself, is that really what will bring you happiness? Is that really what you want? Because you can drive yourself. I've worked with a lot of senior executives who have driven themselves their whole lives and have achieved all the things that they thought were going to result in their living a good life. And they're miserable.
Right.
Because they've ruined their personal relationships with their kids and their spouses because they've been working so hard. They've driven themselves so hard that their health is failing. And they have climbed the ladder of success and then found out that it was actually leaning up against the wrong wall. And we really need to look at this from the point of view of death. Like, nobody says on their deathbed, I should have spent more time at the office.
So true.
Nobody says that. You know, they say, I should have spent more time with my kids. I should have contributed to the world. I should have been a better husband or wife. That's what people say. And so when you're on your deathbed, is all that stuff that you've accumulated going to make you happy? No, it's how many people are surrounding your bed saying, you lived a great life. You contributed to my life. Thank you for being alive. That's what's gonna matter at the end. And that's a really good measurement of what matters today.
Wow, that's exactly right. And I guess maybe to just put a finer point on that, it's about the quality of the relationships. You talk about Westerners valuing money, which is true, and things, which is true, but also this idea of fame, this idea that I'm better off with 2 million followers who I never meet face to face than two people who would die for me. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Quantity over quality. That's right. Again, it's the same with money. You know, well, it's how much money you have. It's not how well you use your money. It's how many things you have. It's not how well your things serve you.
So true.
We need to bring this back around to quality instead of quantity.
I love it, man. This was a great exploration. Do you have anything else you'd like to share before we wrap it up here?
Yes. I want to recommend that people get my ebook, Clear Your Beliefs, at clearyourbeliefs.com. There's a exercise in the back, which is called Belief Self-Diagnosis, and it gives people an opportunity to look at what do I believe about in about 20 different categories. What do I believe about myself? What do I believe about others? What do I believe about the world? What do I believe about money and success and finances? What do I believe about health and my body? And by starting to document your beliefs, you can very easily find out where you want to make a change to improve your life. Because whenever you've got negative or limiting beliefs in any of those categories, or beliefs that are simply not true, then it's a chance for you to begin the process of shifting your internal lenses that you look at the world through. And I guarantee you that as we clear up the lens through which we see the world looks brighter, there's more opportunities, there's more possibilities for growth and for happiness. And be careful about the beliefs you take in from the media, because they've got an agenda and it's not for your happiness.
This is a great exploration. I think this was overdue in 2020, especially, you know, and I can't thank you enough for taking the time to do this, Lion. Let's connect again soon on another category in the future.
I am always available to you, Jordan. I love doing this with you.
I hope you listeners enjoyed this exploration. I hope that you really examine your beliefs and how they play into your overall quality of life and your general mood and state of experience throughout your days. I would love to hear your feedback in the Facebook group. I'll be up there. Thank you all so much. This is Jordan River and Lion Goodman signing off, wishing all you Lifebook members an extraordinary day. We'll see you next time on the Lifebook Member Podcast.